Hello, I'm Janet Smooley, Investment Director at Fern Dolphin, and in this week's Fern Dolphin podcast, I'm speaking to Maria Wittmann, who is a senior strategist in the multi-asset class research team at State Street Global Markets. She has worked there for two decades, and her main research focus is equities. I've met Maria many times in my Citi career, and I've always enjoyed her presentations and insights. So really a privilege to have her with us today. We're going to talk about inflation, equity region, sectors, styles, and investors' positioning. But bear in mind that we cannot guarantee sources from outside Fern Dolphin. Tax legislation and allowances can change. And remember, when investing, your capital is at risk. Investment values may increase or decrease because of currency fluctuations, and future performance may differ from that of the past. Now let's find out more. A very warm welcome to Maria for taking the time to share with our audience her views on the global economy and markets. There are many things to cover, but I'd like to start by asking your thoughts on inflation. So inflation is a key concern for markets, and there is still quite high uncertainty on where it may settle. State Street has a proprietary product called Price Tax, which tracks online prices globally. Can you tell us briefly what Price Tax is? For people who are not familiar, and what Price Tax shows in terms of inflation trends and whether we're seeing peak inflation already.
Yeah, hello. My pleasure to be on this podcast, so first time. So I'll do my best. So Price Tax is actually quite a unique product we have at State Street. So it's a clever software that goes online shopping every day and scrapes prices from internet. And I mean, the unique advantage of it is that, I mean, first of all, it's daily and it's we know it's a couple days T plus two, so we don't have to wait from official statistical offices. But secondly, we scrape prices from everywhere around the world, and it's very consistent methodology, so we get quite a good feel of trends in pricing behavior. And as a strategist, I find it not only really exciting to look at how prices develop and think about, I mean, right now, the only thing anybody can think about is inflation, but in kind of more normal times, that's a really good indication of demand conditions as well. Are retailers confident enough to increase or decrease prices? So that's quite interesting as well. But from what we're seeing right now, price stats obviously have shown quite a strong acceleration in prices around the world, everywhere, both emerging, developed market, consistently for the last 12 months. So that's very strong. However, what we saw in the last, I would say, probably 3 weeks, very recent data, is that the pace of annual increase in inflation has started to come down. So it looks like, at least in price stats data, we kind of gone past the peak in inflation. It's not to say that price formation is slowing or we are seeing any disinflation. No, absolutely not. It's still fairly strong, but we've gone past this really huge base effects we were seeing compared to last year. So that's the very first point. So it looks like we're kind of gone past the peak, at least in online data. So maybe in official data, maybe we'll have another month of huge outsized gain, but then we're beginning to get back to more kind of usual price increases we've seen. And second point I want to make is looking at advantage of online prices is it captures behavior of retailers and consumer, and without making very strong assumption about kind of consumption baskets. And one interesting piece of research our colleagues have done in Price Stats is looking at degree of overstatement, the decline in inflation we saw last year when prices collapsed. Say like transportation is my favorite example, is that prices of transportation completely collapsed to zero last year when nobody could travel, but they still had a fairly substantial weight in the consumption basket. So applying any weight times zero, you drag prices of overall kind of basket lower than it actually should be. Prices of food that we all bought in supermarkets have come up, but the weight of that consumption has also increased. So again, that was not represented in the basket. What we're seeing right now is exact opposite of this effect. Airline fares, we all heard about in the US how much they increased, but still people are flying less than pre-COVID. So we're giving it maybe disproportionately high weight in the index. Price of food has come down as we can go to the restaurants and eat, but again, the weight is not adjusted. So again, the other point to make on inflation is that there is quite a substantial degree of overstatement of inflation in official data. So when you read 5% from BLS, it's probably 4 to 4.5. So that's just to put it into perspective.
I see. So what about the prices of semiconductors? We've read so many headlines on that. Is the supply shortages there really severe? And what are your analysts telling you about that?
Yeah, that's actually a really, really good point. And I think, I mean, Fed is and market overall is really kind of fixated on this point whether inflation is transitory and persistent. And unfortunately, nobody can give us a good answer until economies really reopen and we kind of get a little bit closer to normality. So we wouldn't know whether it's permanent or persistent. But what we clearly seeing there are quite a lot of supply disruptions, supply chains are broken, and semiconductors is a really good example there. I mean, we all heard about semiconductors shortages. I mean, the indicator I watch is the delivery time, and it takes, right now it's gone to quite a historical high. It's 18 weeks since you can order it cheap and receive it. Oh. So it is quite extensive. And I think they, like, people know about semiconductor problems, but I suspect it's knowing about it is still not enough to solve the problem. So the way I mean, obviously semiconductor production is mind-boggling difficult, and I mean, yeah, people say rocket science is probably even harder than that. but from what I understand is that demand has massively increased, but the problem is that supply is very, very inelastic. It will take 2 to 3 years to build a new plant. It will take tens of billions of dollars of investment and massive infrastructure around it. So even though we know about problems with semiconductors, it's quite unlikely to be solved very quickly. So we'll probably have those long delays for some time. We probably will have higher prices of semiconductors. And it's very little that central banks can do about it, right? So short, yeah, of increasing interest rate by 5, 6, 7%, I mean, they, yeah, can't bring the demand for that sort of equipment. So it's quite unlikely to be solved. And I mean, there's other issues with semiconductors that people not often talk about is, I mean, majority of semiconductors produced in Southeast Asia, like Taiwan, Korea, those countries actually are on tectonic plates, so I mean, you can have like things like earthquake, natural disasters, or even wars. This year, we apparently, again, like a strategist, you learn quite a lot of things about lots of other industries, but what we're increasingly reading is that to produce semiconductors, you need a lot of water, one of the resources, and this area of the world actually had one of the lowest rainfalls this year. So there is enough water, there are droughts coming. So that's actually a really, really substantial risk in terms of kind of semiconductor production. And it's big risk for global economy because it's so concentrated. I mean, US and Europe are trying to work on kind of semiconductor independence and build the plants in US and Europe. But as I said, it takes years. It takes billions of dollars of investment. So it's unlikely to be solved very quickly, and it's something to keep a close eye on. Potentially can be quite a big risk to global kind of economic recovery if we don't have enough semiconductors, as now they are almost it's like to produce a car, you don't need semiconductor is not the most important thing, but you can't, yeah, have a car without, you can't have a microwave, you can't have a fridge, you can't have a phone. There are lots of the list of goods that require semiconductor, often not like low-end semiconductors, is really, really long. So that's something that we need to keep an eye on, and I think it's a very important kind of indicator of potential risks to growth.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep a close eye on the development. I think you make a very good point that the Fed, I mean, there's a limit to what the Fed can do about these semiconductor, yeah, shortages. But overall, how does the Fed make of all the recent economic development and shocking inflation prints? When do you expect the Federal Reserve to move? And do you expect a market sell-off when the Fed does taper?
Yeah, I think market is absolutely laser focused on monetary policy. I would probably say that it is the key driver to understand kind of future development of financial markets. And I probably wouldn't be too kind of over exaggerating it too much by saying that the very, very low interest rates and very accommodative monetary policy is one of the key reasons stock markets or risk assets are where they are and performed as strongly following like a year of recession. So it is absolutely critical. Allocation within equities, again, really, really dependent on monetary policy. So this value growth trade, again, very, very important. So Fed, absolutely the key driver. And actually, last week is probably quite a good kind of conversation point to think about how focused market is. I mean, I have to say, I would probably, and again, it's slightly easier to do it with the benefit of kind of few days of market normalizing, but our read is that prior to FOMC, I think ourselves and kind of majority of market consensus was that Fed will do almost nothing for a very, very long period of time. And I think now this almost nothing has changed. So now we say instead of almost nothing, they say they'll do very little, but again, yeah, in a very extended period of time. So they're talking about, I don't know, 50 basis points hike in 2-3 years. So that to us is still very, very accommodative conditions. I think what that makes me think is that economies are we have very successful vaccination program around the world. Economies are reopening. Consumer corporates have a lot of cash to spend. They're eager to spend it, and Fed is not going to be very actively fighting it, at least not as aggressively as market is worried about. So what it makes me think is that the reflation is really the kind of path of least resistance. So we're probably likely to go into continue to stay in those reflation trades we saw since the beginning of the year, so commodities, industrials, consumer discretionary, stocks grinding higher, volatility came down again after this big spike, so like carry trade look interesting. So I think as long as Fed is not being very aggressive, and that's kind of the message we heard from Chairman Powell in the last couple of days, is No, we're still kind of waiting for more data. We're still not talking about tapering. Yeah. So that message is still there. So we still see Fed as very, very accommodative. And that's, to us, is green light for risk trade.
Yeah, we tend to agree. We think the Fed will remain very accommodative for a prolonged period of time as well. So with the Fed policy and reflation being the key topics, can you give us an insight on the notable investor positioning and ETF flows, and what do you make of it for asset allocation?
I mean, well, what is really interesting to me, and one trade I'm watching quite carefully, is European stocks. So European stocks, people who know myself would know that I love US stocks. So we've been in US.
Yeah. I remember.
Exactly. For the last 10 years, it's been a very simple story. US stocks with lots of tech, very strong growth outlook. That's done well. And the flip side of it was underperformance of Europe. And and what's interesting, Europe underperformed for a decade. And the chart I look at is relative performance of European stocks overlaid with relative earnings in Europe. And both those lines were broadly trending downwards for more than a decade. So that's a kind of a story about Europe underperformance, weaker earnings, potentially because there is not that much technology stocks, which were really the core and this kind of secular stagnation story we lived before. What is interesting right now, European stocks are best performing stocks this year. But if you look at that decade-long chart, you can hardly see the change in performance. And like you asked about ETF flows, what we see now is a huge amount of inflows into European stocks. So European ETFs really being very kind of hot asset, a lot of money going in there. And for us, that makes a lot of sense. So Europe is a really good play on the kind of cyclical recovery. It has lots of cyclical stocks. It has very good operating leverage. So it can benefit from this, not just domestic recovery and reopening and improvement in vaccination story, but from overall global recovery. So that's quite exciting to watch. And as I said, it underperformed for a decade. So valuation, positioning, so all those arguments are there despite strong performance in the last 6 months, so that can continue for some time. So that's quite exciting trend to watch.
Okay, so in relation to your point about European stocks, I would like to ask you about European banking stocks.
Mm.
They have benefited really from a recovery in activity and the preference for value sector this year. I mean, is it really just a short-term trade, or is it possible for longer-term investment?
Yeah, that's I would say that's probably, Jenny, the most difficult question so far. I mean, as I said, I like growth. I like U.S. stocks, technology stocks. So banks have for years been the flip side of that trade, and they performed very well this year. And I think, like you say, that's a kind of a reopening trade, better earnings outlook. But for us, for long term, to make a long term investment case for banks, you really need to see higher interest rates, steeper yield curve. And what we saw so far, kind of in this kind of reopening trade, is that interest rates moved from the lows, but they're still mm-hmm. very, very low. Yield yeah. curve has steepened, but it's still not steep in a kind of pre-COVID sense of the world. So, and that's a challenge. That's a really big challenge. And that's kind of the challenge that European banks have been facing for quite a while. The other point to make is that a lot of recovery in European banking stocks last year came from stronger revenues, which banks were able to generate in investment banking and trading activity, given huge volatility we saw last year, huge corporate issuance. And I suspect that revenue source can potentially be kind of drying out. I mean, we see a lot less volatility now that Fed guidance is so kind of accepted by the market, so that trading revenue are a lot more challenging. While like traditional corporate and consumer lending, again, quite hamstrung by very low interest rates, so that kind of net interest margins are really difficult to expand. So banks, yeah. yes, they're in better positions than they've been a year ago. Of course, it's reopening trade. But again, looking at performance, they run quite a lot. So yeah. if I have to choose, I would probably choose other reopening trades where kind of fundamental case is a little bit easier, like consumer stocks, maybe industrial stocks with all the huge CapEx plans that every company is talking about. So yes, it's probably not as sell as it used to be for quite a while, but I would choose other trades.
Okay, in terms of other trades, what about the other favorite trade, which is mining, materials, commodities? These are cyclical stocks, and they'll definitely fit into the reflation trade. I mean, they have also rallied quite a lot this year. We started to see some of those key industrial commodity prices rolling over, actually, in recent weeks. How far can this outperformance in cyclicals continue, in your view?
Yeah, no, we're still very optimistic on commodity, on cyclicals and commodities specifically. It's, again, it's very kind of similar idea of economic growth being strong, financial conditions being accommodative, and there's piles and piles of cash, as we mentioned, corporates and consumers are sitting on. So, and what to me was interesting about consumer is, I don't know, 6 months ago when vaccine was just announced, there were quite a lot of hesitation, I mean, on the back, maybe more from a kind of strategist and analyst, this idea that would consumer feel confident enough to go on a plane with other people? Would we be happy to go to a concert or a football stadium? And now, I don't know, I've been watching Euros last week with my children, and stadiums are full. People yeah. are not worried. And we see that from kind of alternative fast data like Google Tracker, Open Table, all those sources, that the minute people are allowed to go out, the minute people are allowed to go to restaurants or travel, demand really increase. So this idea of pent-up demand is still very, very strong. And yeah. consumer come out of this recession, which is really, really unusual, a lot richer than they went in. So house prices gone up, stock markets gone up, yeah. financial assets. So people have money to spend. We had lots of stimulus, furlough programs, things like that, that help lower income consumer or kind of people who were potentially at risk of losing their jobs. So people have money and they have appetite to spend. But we still have lots of fairly high savings rates. So that's a really good environment to own consumer stocks. Industrial stocks, similarly, we hear about pretty much every company sitting on stronger balance sheets than pre-COVID. And they all talk about, not all, but lots of companies talk about strong CapEx plans, strong buybacks plan again. So money are going to be recycled in the economy. So the cyclical recovery, I mean, to our mind, is very strong.
Yeah. So turning to a region that you always liked, which is the US, you know, technology stocks, again, I know that it is a sector that you really liked and has done really well, obviously. It had some mini sell-off earlier in the year because of rising bond yields. But, you know, after all, it bounced back really strongly with the Nasdaq, again, you know, getting to record high levels. Do you think the sector will continue to do well, even the Fed is going to tighten policy at some point in the future?
What I really, really like about technology stocks is this really unusual combination of fast but stable earnings growth. So oftentimes you have some sectors with faster earnings growth, like, I don't know, like autos, but they're very volatile and cyclical. Or you have very stable earnings growth, like utilities or staples. So they're either stable or fast. But technology is really this kind of unusual sector which has both, which is really attractive as a long-term investor. I absolutely take your point is that technology stocks are not cheap, and they're not cheap for a reason because of this kind of earnings story. So valuation in technology stocks, so to my mind, valuation technology stock will begin to matter and become really problematic is when we really see change in interest rate environment. When interest rates are either increased to level high enough or expected to get there fairly quickly and predictably, that would be a problem for technology stock. And as we discussed at the beginning of our conversation, is right now the environment is still very, very accommodative monetary policy. So I'm not too worried about technology stock. And to say more, I mean, the way we like to structure our portfolio is to have core of the portfolio to be in cyclical stocks and reflation trade, and I don't quote unquote hedge it with technology, and then be underweight maybe defensive stocks. So it's kind of going from reflation to tech, and it's actually we had that idea for quite a while, and I was really happy to see last Friday when we had a kind of response to Fed and curve flattening, and people were worried about maybe slower growth in the future. And then technology stocks performed really well, and reflation stocks sold off, materials, industrials were kind of underperforming, energy, and tech done well. And I think that's kind of a testament to this idea, and a little bit kind of a duration story as well. So lower interest rates, at least for a bit, were kind of seen as positive. But the idea that earnings are really strong, that to me is really exciting, long-term prospect.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting and interesting. And I kind of agree with your view. I think tech stocks is here to stay in investors' portfolio, especially if you're long-term investors. Many, many positive points about tech stocks. So a final question on a more relaxed topic is summer, and we have been trapped in the UK for such a long time, and there are likely to be positive developments on relaxing travel restrictions. Where would you like to travel once all our restrictions are lifted?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if we allow ourselves to dream. I come from Latvia and my family is in Latvia, so I would absolutely love to go see them. We haven't seen them for a long time. And actually, we've been chatting to Janet before call. So Latvia is, for people who haven't been there, it's fairly far north, but what we have in summer is that sun doesn't go down. So it's a fantastic place to go in the summer. It's very outdoorsy. We're still on, it's Baltic Sea, but it's on the coast. So we have a nice beach, not very crowded. Yeah, it's really, really nice place. Today actually is the biggest holiday in Latvian calendar. It's called it's kind of midsummer day, so people stay up all night. There are lots of bonfire, lots of festivities. So yeah, no, Latvia in summer is really, really good tourist destination. Still a little bit kind of undiscovered, so that's a nice place to go. I'd recommend.
Oh, thank you so much. I would definitely love to visit. I've never been, but it really sounds so beautiful and unique as well. But I just hope that the air tickets don't get too expensive once everyone, you know, start traveling again. So yeah, thank you for the recommendation. And of course, thank you very much for being our guest today for these wonderful insights. I'm sure our audience will find it very useful. And hopefully our audience will join us again next time at our next Burn Dolphin podcast. Thank you.
My pleasure.